It was probably best, thought Severus the next morning when he woke, to warn Minerva in advance of tossing her into a room with the supposedly dead savior of the wizarding world. He had learned much about Harry Potter the previous night, and he thought about that as he lay in the somber darkness of his room at Grimald Place, listening to the creaking and moaning of the old house around him. Harry was independent, open-minded, and inexplicably forgiving. Deprived by Albus Dumbledore of a childhood, indeed a life, among wizards, he had left his unkind aunt's home when he was not quite 18, and had inexplicably not slammed the door behind him. He had taken care of himself ever since, had made his own decisions and had built his own life. When tragedy struck and he sustained the leg injury, he changed directions but had kept moving. His weakness might indeed be his strength. His desire to know his family, to learn any tidbit, however small, about his mother, his father, to see them in photos, hear stories of them, witness their lives, their deaths, in Godric's Hollow, to understand who he was through their lives, their sacrifices. Because he had made a hole of such magnitude in his life, he had proven, over the course of the evening, willing to suspend disbelief to fill that hole with stories from a stranger about a magical world no more real to him than a fairy tale. Severus had not been reluctant to speak about Lily. Speaking about Lily, after all this time, had a certain freedom to it. It liberated him in a way he did not fully understand. On the walk to the cinema, he had told her son how he had met her when they were very young, at the play park. How he had known she was magical, just like him. How he had been the first one to explain magic to her. How she had believed, because she was a child, and because it explained all the odd things she could do. How she was the most perfect friend, the loveliest girl, the kindest, most forgiving soul. "She doesn't sound a lot like my Aunt Petunia," said Harry with a sigh.
"She wasn't," answered Severus. "Petunia always resented her gifts. I imagine it made her quite smug to see you grow up without magic."
Had things been different, Severus would not have ended the evening with the goodbye kiss at Harry's door. Harry, clearly, was offering more. He had wrapped both arms around Severus's neck to kiss him, and Severus hadn't been able to resist the temptation of tasting those lips and running his fingers down Harry's jawline. But he backed away a step as Harry turned to unlock the door and had made his excuses. It was late, he had to make arrangements with Professor McGonagall, and had resolutely ignored the look of disappointment on Harry's face. He had heard someone move on the floor above him. Footsteps, clearly heading for the loo at the end of the corridor. No, he couldn't pursue a relationship with Potter, no matter that he was attractive, charismatic, and clearly interested in him. The boy's godfather would kill him, literally. He'd decide that Snape had taken advantage of his innocent godson and would go for his throat, or make his pet wolf do the dirty work for him. He was the leader of the Order of the Phoenix. Everyone in the Order would fault him for making a move on Harry Potter. How do you explain to Potter's adoring public that the boy who lived had been the one to make the first move?
"But he kissed me first."
No, unfortunately he would have to pull back. Let some other lucky wizard, the witches didn't stand a chance, have a go. He needed to keep his distance, physically at least, and let Potter get acclimated to the wizarding world. And if Potter came after him then, when he knew what an unmitigated bastard he really was, then no one could complain. But damn, it had felt so good, so right, to hold Harry against him as he'd apparated them across the continent. And no matter how demanding his life, and how inconsequential a starlit sky on a moonless night in the middle of nowhere, standing there with two arms full of Harry Potter had been almost enough for him to forget the war, and Voldemort, and the Order, and everything. He reluctantly rolled over and got out of bed. He had to find Minerva and drop the bombshell on her, then get her over to Potter's before he had too much time to think. Harry Potter sat at the table in the same coffee shop where he had met Severus less than a week ago. A pumpkin spice muffin sat on a stoneware plate before him, but he hadn't yet touched it. He had touched his coffee, had more than touched it, in fact. He put the cup down as Hermione and Ron slid into the booth across from him, both of them looking slightly ill at ease.
"Morning, Harry," said Ron, smiling brightly, his voice artificially cheery.
Harry just stared at them. He picked up his coffee cup again and drained it in a go.
"Show me your wands," he said, his voice low.
Hermione and Ron exchanged a glance.
Harry, did Severus tell you about the Statute of Secrecy? Asked Hermione, her voice even lower than Harry's.
No, show me.
Another glance, then Ron shrugged and opened his jacket. The wand was tucked into a narrow inside pocket, about 4 inches visible at the top. Harry stared, breathing evenly, then nodded and looked over at Hermione. She sighed and shook her head, biting her bottom lip.
I don't have mine, Harry. I'm muggle-born. I gave it up.
Ron took her hand, lacing their fingers together, and wrapped his arm around her shoulders. He placed his hand inside his jacket and muttered something, then spoke in a low voice.
The Ministry's cracked down on muggle-borns. If you couldn't prove you had at least one magical parent, you had to give up your wand and submit to the trace.
Ron squeezed his wife's hand.
Hermione can only do magic if we're somewhere protected, like my family's home. She can't be traced there. It's run under really strong fidelis.
At least I can use magical objects, Hermione added. She picked up her purse and set it on the table. It was a tiny bag, no bigger than a woman's wallet, but she opened the clasp and tilted it toward him. He could see a pocket dictionary and a hairbrush, as well as the mobile phone and at least 4 books.
Wizard space, muttered Ron.
Hermione closed the purse and tucked it on the bench beside her.
I don't understand, said Harry.
What's wrong with being a muggle? And what about the Ministry? What does that have to do with anything?
Muggle-born, corrected Ron. Not muggle. It's the new Ministry, Harry. Their blood purse.
The Ministry of Magic, Harry, Hermione clarified, seeing his confusion.
There's a Ministry for Magic? Harry said, getting nods from both Ron and Hermione. Sounds like Hitler with the Jews.
Not quite that bad yet, she said. They haven't tried to round us up, and...
She bit her lip again, and Harry reached across and covered their joined hands with his.
I'm sorry, he said. I didn't know.
He could only imagine what it must feel like to have magic taken away. At least with him, he'd never known about it and couldn't miss what he'd never really had.
You couldn't have known, Harry, said Ron. It's complicated. And Hermione's doing all right. She's holding out.
He smiled.
So Snape filled you in, he said.
Harry frowned.
Yes, Severus Stevens filled me in.
I'm sorry, Harry. He has to be careful.
Harry dropped his head into his hands, then looked over, chin still resting on his hands, at the couple across from him.
This morning, I wondered. I really wondered if I had dreamed it all up. It felt so real, but it seemed so impossible. It was like my heart believed it, but my brain didn't.
Magic is like that, said Hermione, smiling rather sadly.
You'll get used to it, said Ron. One day, I'll bet you'll wonder how you ever did without it.
He grinned, but his face fell as he realized what he'd said.
Now, Ron, admonished Hermione, softly. Plenty of people do without it, and they get along just fine.
But it's a part of us, said Ron. We're wizards. And if you didn't get to do it at the Burrow and the headquarters, you'd likely go spare, Hermione. Like I said, it's part of us, isn't it? I bet you always felt like there was something missing in your life, didn't you, Harry?
Only my past, said Harry rather dully. He made a move to slide out of his bench.
I need more coffee, he explained.
I'll get it, said Ron. I need something anyway, and if you don't make a start on that muffin before I get back, I'm going to have to eat it.
Harry grinned. He liked Ron. He liked how amiable he was. He enjoyed his sense of humor. He especially enjoyed watching him bicker with Hermione. He had already learned that Ron's stomach was a bottomless pit, so he slid the plate closer and picked up the muffin.
Are you all right, Harry? Asked Hermione as Ron went off to get them all coffee.
It's a lot to take in, I know. And I'm sorry for not being forthright with you from the beginning. It's just that you gave me such a jolt, you know. I didn't know what to think.
Don't worry about it. He hesitated.
So, why did you go to Severus? Is he some bigwig in the magical world or something?
Oh. She stared at Harry, trying to process this. What had Severus told Harry, and what hadn't he?
What did he tell you about himself? She asked, smiling in acknowledgement that she hadn't really answered his question at all.
Not much, really. He went to school at Hogwarts and used to teach there. He knew my mum from the time they were children.
Did he? I didn't know that. She mused.
She looked around the cafe, watching Ron as he ordered at the counter.
Well, What did he tell you about besides himself, then?
He told me about my parents, and about how I got this scar.
Harry brushed his fringe back with his hand, then it dropped down again.
Then he popped me all over the place and showed me things. I could hardly take it all in. He popped us right into the middle of Stonehenge, and on top of St. Paul's.
He didn't, Hermione said with a knowing smile.
Stop making fun, said Harry, grinning at his own excitement. This is all new to me. We even went to Romania to see dragons, and then to a little village where my parents lived, and then to see Hogwarts.
Hogwarts?
Hermione looked up quickly. She looked around and lowered her voice.
He took you to Hogwarts?
Well, yeah, just outside the gates and only for a couple minutes, under some sort of cloak he had. He called it an invisibility cloak.
He laughed, shaking his head.
He said it was important that I see it. You really went to school in a castle?
Oh, don't romanticize it too much, said Hermione. It was drafty as hell and had 142 staircases, and there are ghosts and a really annoying poltergeist.
Ghosts? He stared at her, not knowing if she was joking.
Hermione smiled kindly and reached out to cover his hands with hers.
Oh, Harry, I'm sorry. It is hard to believe at first. It was hard to believe for me when I was 11. I can't imagine what I'd be thinking if I were in your place.
But we'll get you there, won't we?
Harry nodded. Hermione looked so sincere.
So tell me about Severus, then, he said, changing the tone of the conversation.
Why did you bring him to meet me?
Why him?
Because he knew my parents?
Hermione spoke cautiously.
Did you make arrangements to see him again?
I'm sure he has more to tell you.
Harry put the muffin back on his plate.
He wants to bring someone else by tonight to explain more to me.
Oh, who?
Hermione looked interested.
Someone who's still teaching at Hogwarts. He said she knew my parents and could explain what's been going on since they died.
Ah, McGonagall, then.
She was the only female professor in the Order, and as former head of Gryffindor would be the right choice to speak with Harry. But Minerva's position was incredibly perilous. She was a headmistress now, though the position was little more than a figurehead, with Voldemort in charge and Death Eaters and sympathizers running the Hogwarts Board of Governors. The last three classes that had sorted had contained no Muggleborns, and while Half-Bloods were still getting their Hogwarts letters, everyone expected that, too, to change before long. The curriculum had changed as well, though slowly, covertly, with the History of Magic textbooks already rewritten and replaced, and the Unforgivable Curses now being called the Last Resort Curses. Minerva was the most critical of the spies, watched closely by the corrupt ministry, surviving by doing her job for the students, for Hogwarts, and appearing not to have a political opinion of her own. If Severus was risking bringing Minerva to meet Harry, the meeting was even more important than she would have guessed.
McGonagall?
Harry said. He didn't mention her name.
She was the head of Gryffindor House, said Hermione.
Your parents were Gryffindors. So was I, and Ron too, and all his family.
What's a Gryffindor? Asked Harry, testing the name out on his tongue.
Hogwarts has a four-house system, answered Hermione. She didn't see that telling Harry about the houses would compromise whatever Severus's plans were.
You are sorted into a house according to your abilities and interests when you arrive for your first year. Gryffindors are brave and headstrong, she laughed.
Anyway, you live in dorms, and the other members of your house attend most of your classes with them. There are house tables in the Great Hall, too, and house colors and teams. House affiliation is really important. I imagine you'd have been a Gryffindor, too, Harry.
Maybe. He shrugged noncommittally.
Interesting as it all was, it would never be his to experience. Ron came back with the coffee and for the next 45 minutes entertained Harry with stories of his family. Of the twins, Fred and George, who were 2 years older than Ron and had their own joke shop and were living together with the same woman.
That's... wow.
Harry shook his head. Together, you say?
Yeah, Ron answered unapologetically.
They say Angelina is too much woman for one man.
Hermione elbowed him, and Harry laughed.
He told them about Bill and his wife Fleur and their baby Esperance, Hope, who was almost a year old now. About his sister Jenny, who played Quidditch, and his brother Charlie, the one who liked blokes. And his mom and dad, and the house they lived in Ottery St. Catchpole. About his brother Percy, who had died 2 years before.
Freak accident, said Ron, but that's all he would say.
And when Harry wondered about people overhearing them, Hermione told them about the spell Ron had cast, the spell called Muffliato.
Snape invented it, she said. He's really brilliant, Harry, behind that harsh exterior.
He can be a real arse, added Ron.
When Hermione elbowed him, he looked affronted.
What? He can. You hated him too, didn't you? Before you knew he wasn't really...
It was her glare that shut him up this time, not her elbow. Harry filed this bit of information away with interest. He liked Severus, and hadn't found him unpleasant or harsh at all.
and Harry was feeling better about things when he left the cafe and headed back home. Ron and Hermione were just regular people, weren't they? They had families and jobs, joys and tragedies. They didn't act differently than other people he knew. Perhaps a bit more suspicious, a bit more close-lipped about things. But he thought, as he unlocked his door, that they hadn't told him anything more about Severus other than that they found him, or used to find him, unpleasant. And even with the real, soul-satisfying information he now had about his parents, he found himself just as interested in Severus. Severus had returned his kiss last night, reluctantly at first, perhaps, but then with interest, definite interest. Harry had loved the way he kissed, had loved the press of the surprisingly strong, lean body against his own. But then he had stepped back, declined Harry's nonverbal offer for more. He was keeping his distance. But why? And why, amid all of these new discoveries and new people, with this unbelievable turn his life was taking, was he continuing to think so much about Severus Snape?
"I am happy you decided on Miss Granger instead of Sirius," said Minerva McGonagall, as she dusted herself off after fluing into the vacant flat Severus had located and borrowed for the day. The flat was a dingy three-room walk-up in a building two down from Harry's. "She, at least, will treat my body with respect."
"It isn't your body, Minerva," corrected Severus.
He had stepped out of the flue ahead of her and was looking out the window at the street below.
"It is her body, polyjuiced to look like yours."
"Well, I'll be showing up at Rose Matters with Poppy in 10 minutes, and will likely be there 2 hours. It is Saturday night, and the service at the Three Broomsticks is slow, even on a weeknight. Shall we get on with it?"
Severus turned from the window and nodded. Minerva understood Muggle clothing much better than most witches and wizards her age. She wore a plain black suit dress with a silk scarf draped around her neck, her hair in a tight bun, sensible black shoes on her feet.
"You are ready. You are composed. He looks a great deal like James, Minerva. A great deal."
She gave him a tight-lipped smile.
"I am ready. You hardly gave me enough time to prepare myself, though, and I don't believe I would have believed you if Miss Granger hadn't bucked you up."
They walked together out of the flat and down to the street, making themselves walk casually to Harry's nearby building. Severus was extremely cautious with his forays out into London. He was undesirable number one, the top of the Ministry's wanted list. The Ministry, however, did not understand the Muggle world as well as Severus did, and as long as Severus took the appropriate cautions, he felt relatively safe. Severus was not looking forward to the conversation that they were about to have with Harry. The boy had just received a huge shock the day before, and already it was time to tell him that he was the child of prophecy, destined to bring down the monster of a man who had killed his parents. Yesterday he had been introduced to the wonderful, glorious world of magic. Today he would be introduced to that same world, threatened, in turmoil, to a clandestine group of spies and rebels, and he had yet to figure out why Albus had hidden the boy. There was a reason, somewhere, somehow. With Albus there was always a reason.
"More tea, Severus. The boy needs more tea."
Minerva, sitting next to Harry Potter on the sofa in the young man's living room, handed Harry's teacup across the coffee table to Severus.
"It's cold," said Harry rather dully.
Minerva patted his hand.
"Severus will warm it up for you, then."
She took the cup back from Severus and pressed it into Harry's hands.
"And chocolate, Severus. Harry would do well with a nice bar of honeydukes."
"Should I operate to Hogsmeade and stock up?"
Severus could not help the sarcasm. Minerva was a stern old witch, but when it came to one of her Gryffindors, or would have been Gryffindors,
"I don't need chocolate," said Harry, directing his comment to Severus. "I need something stronger to drink than tea."
Minerva immediately reached for her handbag and extracted an ornate silver flask. She picked up an empty cup from the table and filled it halfway.
"There you go. You should have said something earlier, Harry. I wouldn't have forced all that tea down your throat."
"He needs a calming draught," said Severus, glancing at Harry's pale face.
"I don't need a calming," Harry snapped, exasperated.
"Potion," muttered Severus.
Harry shook his head.
"I'm fine. I just need some time with it, that's all."
In the last hour, he had learned that the madman who had tried to kill him wasn't dead after all.
He'd learned that Voldemort had risen again 4 years ago, reborn, or remade, from an ancient spell, aided by a man named Peter Pettigrew, a friend of his parents and their betrayer. That Voldemort and his henchmen, the Death Eaters, had taken over the Ministry of Magic and were now effectively running Wizarding Britain. That Voldemort had risen after a student at Hogwarts had murdered Albus Dumbledore. That Severus Snape was now the leader of the resistance movement, the Order of the Phoenix, whose only goal, was to defeat Voldemort. And he learned that it was now forbidden to say Voldemort's name. Minerva had told Harry about the years after his parents' death, and about how the Dark Lord had slowly gained his power back and his followers. She told him that no one knew how he had defeated Death when his own killing curse rebounded and hit him, but that defeating Death had been his goal all along. She'd introduced him to the classification system of purebloods, half-bloods, and muggleborns. She'd spoken of Hogwarts, the courses of study there, and the four houses, the four founders, and what they represented. She explained the Ministry of Magic and the various departments within it, how they had functioned before Voldemort, and how they functioned now. Severus, for his part, sat back in his chair and watched Minerva work her magic. Harry was eating out of her hand, and Minerva was on her best storytelling roll. Had Severus been alone with Harry, he would not have taken this long to bring up the prophecy. He would not have spun romance and nostalgia into the story. He would not have mentioned Sirius's blasted flying motorcycle. A flying motorcycle? Harry's eyes had gone wide. He had thought it a dream, a vivid dream, one of those that you had from time to time in your entire life. It was his pride and joy, Minerva said fondly, a flicker of something nearly forgotten in her eye. Hagrid used it many years ago, on that awful night, when he rescued you from Godric's Hollow. Hagrid, he repeated, testing the name on his tongue. The dream. Even the dream hadn't really been a dream. He looked up at Minerva. Is Hagrid a giant? A half-giant, she said, narrowing her eyes. You remember him, Harry? She sounded hopeful, but Severus scoffed. How could he remember Hagrid? Severus said. He was practically a baby when he went to live with the Dursleys. No, I do. I've had this dream on and off all my life, of a giant man on a flying motorcycle. He spoke quietly, his voice subdued, before standing and walking to the window to look out over the London street below. He was the one that took me from my parents' house then, that brought me to the Dursleys? Severus and Minerva exchanged a glance. He worked with Albus, Harry. He did as he was told. Hagrid is a good man. He's a member of the Order even now. You'll have a chance to meet him if you'd like. Harry turned around. Why did he send me there? He asked quietly. Instead of to someone who actually wanted me. Your mother's blood sacrifice, Harry, answered Minerva. She gave her life to save you. You would be safe until you came of age, so long as you lived with someone who shared her blood and called that place home. Harry glanced over at Severus. He nodded. Harry thought he looked, well, uncomfortable, pained. What do you want from me? Harry asked, turning back toward the window. We want you to understand your past, Harry, to be part of the magical world, to claim your heritage. Minerva's voice was even, soothing. Harry stared at the window, wanting to believe her, to believe that this was all there was, an offer of friendship, of belonging, an invitation to reclaim his past, the past he'd been denied, the past he'd never known. He chanced a glance at Severus. Severus's mouth was set in a tight line. He was worried, Harry knew. There was something that Minerva hadn't yet told him, something weighing heavily on Severus's mind.
Tell him about the prophecy, Minerva, Severus growled. It is the reason we are here, after all.
Prophecy? Harry looked up sharply. What's that?
Do you know what a prophecy is? Severus asked.
Of course I know what a prophecy is, though we don't take them very seriously in my world, answered Harry. But you said the prophecy. You're obviously referring to something specific. Minerva pursed her lips and gave Severus an exasperated look. We do take prophecy seriously in the magical world, Harry, she began. Too seriously, if you ask me. She walked over to him and took his hands in hers, looking him in the eyes as she spoke. Harry drew back slightly, glancing over at Severus and frowning at the other man's closed posture. A seer made a prophecy about the one who would defeat the Dark Lord, she began. The Dark Lord discovered this prophecy and interpreted it to mean you, Harry, that you are the one destined to destroy him.
And that is why he tried to kill you when you were a baby. Why he killed your parents when they stood in his way.
Minerva.
Severus's voice trailed off. Harry really hadn't needed to know that part. The expression on Harry's face moved rapidly from disbelieving to stricken. What do you mean, interpreted it to mean me? Harry was addressing Minerva, ignoring Severus. Was it me, Minerva, or was he wrong?
There is no way to know for sure, said Severus, answering before Minerva could. You are not the only child whom the prophecy could have described, yet the Dark Lord, given the two possibilities, chose you.
But the other? Why can't it be Neville Longbottom? Supplied Minerva with a sad sigh. And Neville is beyond help, Harry. With you apparently dead, the Dark Lord hunted down Mr. Longbottom just to cover the possibility that he had been wrong the first time. Mr. Longbottom was captured shortly before Headmaster Dumbledore's death. He has not been seen or heard from since. Harry watched Minerva's hands as she spoke. They were clasped around his tightly and trembled slightly. They were old hands, wrinkled and veined, with carefully manicured fingernails, old yet strong. He glanced at her face. She felt the loss of this Neville strongly, but she had a determined look about her. He glanced across at Severus. Severus, for his part, was watching him intently. This Neville was a wizard. He could use magic. Severus looked at Minerva. Harry's gaze moved over to her. Magic can be a wondrous thing, Mr. Potter, a truly marvelous gift. And while Mr. Longbottom was indeed a gifted wizard, his gifts were strongest in the areas outside of combat.
We would like your help, said Severus, surprising both Harry and Minerva. We must destroy the Dark Lord before he gains more strength. He may seem content with the lordship over the magic world now, but we all know he will not stop here. He will use magic against the Muggle world. Soon he will not be satisfied with killing and torturing individual Muggles.
Harry didn't miss Minerva's expression hardening.
The Dark Lord has the ability, with planning, power, and correct political moves, to rule all of Britain, all of Europe. Perhaps his sights will be even higher.
Harry leaned heavily against the wall beside the window, clearly ill at ease in his own home. Like I told Hermione and Ron this morning, this guy sounds like an Adolf Hitler, and it took an entire world war to bring him down. No matter what this prophecy says, I'm just one man. He limped over to the sofa and picked up his crutch, and a damaged one at that. He placed the crutch down carefully again and looked at Severus, then Minerva. Look, he said with a frustrated sigh, I'm not a wizard. I'm just a disabled soldier trying to get back on his feet. I really don't think I can help you. Oh, but you are a wizard. It was Minerva this time, not Severus. She retook her seat next to him and leaned forward, taking one of Harry's hands in her own again. And you can help. The question is, Mr. Potter, Harry, is it worth it to you? She dropped his hand and reached down and deliberately rested her own on his leg, just above his knee. It isn't my problem, he said, shifting a bit, his eyes on her frail-looking hand. Look, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that your lives are so messed up by all of this. I suppose you think I need to go out and hunt down this monster to get vengeance for my parents, but I'm not that kind of person. He looked over at Severus almost desperately. I've always dreamed of them. I've always wanted to know more about them, to find someone who knew them. So thank you, really, for showing me the pictures and telling me about them. I knew them too, Harry, said Minerva. I was their head of house for 7 years. Your mother was only 21 years when she died. When the Dark Lord struck her down as she stood between him and you in your cart, she had red hair and the most lovely green eyes. Eyes very much like yours, Harry.
It isn't working, he said, but his hand shook as he said it.
He opened and closed his fist. Going after him won't bring her back. It won't bring anyone back. He glared at Severus. And you might claim I'm a wizard, but I can't do magic, and I'm not going to outrun anyone with this leg.
Harry, your leg can likely be completely healed, said Minerva. She set her mouth in a firm line and stared at the young man. As for doing magic, you will need a wand for that. And in the end, no matter what choice you make, you have every right to have a wand and learn to use the magic with which you were born. It is a gift, Harry. You can use it how you wish, for good, for ill, or for naught. We have a wand maker in our company.
And you have a surgeon, too? Asked Harry.
We have the equivalent, said Severus, watching as Harry shifted again and rubbed the side of his thigh flexibly.
Right. Harry gave up trying to soothe his achy leg and dropped his head back. Who else do you have hiding with you? James Bond?
Severus stared at Harry. Better than that, even. We have your godfather.
Minerva's eyes widened. Severus had warned her, more like threatened her, not to bring up the subject of Sirius quite yet, not this early in the negotiations, as Severus had called them. The rhythmic clinching and unclinching of Harry's hands stopped. He looked quickly from Severus to Minerva.
What do you mean, my godfather? I don't have a godfather.
You have a godfather. You do not know him, but you have him nonetheless. I expect he will be quite interested to know that his best friend's son is alive, after all.
Harry stared at Severus, then shook his head. He smiled oddly.
So you were saving the big guns for the end? Decided to hold back the news that I have a living family until it looked like I wouldn't go along with your game?
Game? Severus leaned forward. This is not a game, Harry.
He stood and walked over to the fireplace and stood with his back to Harry and Minerva, fingering the flu powder jar on the mantel. Harry stared at his back until Minerva's hand came down upon his knee.
Severus is right, Harry, she said. We do not have time for games. We need your help, and we have much to offer you in return. Come to headquarters, Harry, to meet the rest of the Order, to meet your godfather. I promise that Severus, that we, will ask nothing else of you after that if you ask us not to. You can walk away from us, from magic, from the entire wizarding world at that time, if it feels like the right thing to do.
He cannot just walk away, Minerva.
Severus had spun around and was facing them, one hand still gripping the edge of the mantle.
Oh, but Severus, he most certainly can, Minerva countered, giving Severus a stern look. But I think we need to present a much better argument on why he should not.
She turned to Harry.
Excuse me just a moment, Harry.
She flicked her wrist and her wand slid neatly down into her hand. She pointed it at her handbag and it flew across the room toward them. The clasp opened and a piece of parchment, a quill and a bottle of green ink floated out. Minerva dipped the quill in the ink bottle and wrote quickly on the parchment. She blew it dry when she was finished, then considered it a moment before pointing her wand at it again. A fine spiderwork of lines appeared in various colors. She handed it to Harry.
Read it aloud, she instructed.
The headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix is at number 12 Grimald Place, London, he read, frowning as the words faded away, leaving the top of the parchment blank. He nearly dropped it then, for the colored lines on the bottom half began creeping upward.
It's a map of the underground, he said in awe.
Quite useful, actually, stated Minerva in a matter-of-fact sort of voice. She touched it with her wand, indicating a stop.
Right here, third stop after you change lines. Go left from the tube exit, and you'll have a 2-minute walk.
These lines are moving, he said.
Of course they're moving, said Severus. How else would you know when the next train is coming?
There are electric signs on the platforms, said Harry, but he smiled at Severus, then stared again at the magical map in his hands with the wonder of a small child.
There is an order meeting on Wednesday at 6 o'clock. You can come for dinner and stay for the meeting. Severus, you will ask Ollivander to attend, won't you, so that Harry can try out a wand or two?
She smiled tightly as he nodded.
And for my part, I will have Poppy present, so that the two of you can have a look at Mr. Potter's injury. I doubt we can safely bring in a bone and tissue specialist, given the current atmosphere at St. Mungo's.
Bone and tissue specialist? At St. What?
St. Mungo's, the visiting hospital here in London. You won't have heard of it, of course, Harry. Minerva turned back to Severus. Do you suppose you could call in a favour and see if Horace's nephew could have a look at him? Isn't he practising in Prague now?
No. Severus's voice left no argument. If it were for an order member, I would not hesitate to ask Horace, Minerva. But the only ones, and I repeat, the only ones, who can be trusted with the knowledge that Harry Potter is not dead are members of the Order of the Phoenix. They have all taken the oath of fealty. I can trust them all. Even... And here he looked at Harry directly. Even Sirius Black.
Your godfather, said Minerva to Harry. He and Severus didn't get along well back at school, but they've reached a truce in recent years.
She sighed. Harry, Severus and Poppy will be able to work out what's wrong with your leg and get it back to rights.
Poppy is a mediwitch at Hogwarts and is a fully trained healer. Severus is a potions master. Together, mediwitch, healer, potions master? Harry held out a hand, then pulled it back and rubbed his forehead. I'm sorry, he said. He looked very tired. I've got a lot of learning, or unlearning, to do. We have doctors and nurses and chemists. This sounds medieval. Severus and Minerva exchanged another look.
The magical world does not change at the pace of the muggle world, Severus said. He looked bemused. Our organized history goes back to the time of Merlin. We use medieval terminology because it suffices. Advances in the muggle world are often predicated on technology. Technology is largely non-existent in our world. We have magic at our disposal.
We can regrow bones, said Minerva, and muscles and nerves. We cannot work miracles. We cannot regrow an entire missing limb, but I am confident your leg can be fully healed by means at our disposal.
You could cure cancer, said Harry, his voice was both hopeful and excited.
AIDS, multiple sclerosis, ALS. You could help people with Alzheimer's.
No. Severus's voice was firm, but not hard. It held a note of apology.
Magical treatments work on witches and wizards, Harry. The patient must be magical, or the potions and other treatments simply do not work. In the same way, muggle treatments aren't usually effective on wizards. You yourself may have experienced this. Aspirin not reducing a fever, antihistamines aggravating an allergic reaction instead of alleviating it. You might have had reactions to inoculations, vaccinations.
I nearly died once, said Harry. They gave me the chickenpox vaccine when I joined the service because I'd never had it. I broke out with festering sores and spiked a fever that they couldn't get under control for 3 days.
Chickenpox manifests itself in wizards as something we call dragonpox, said Severus quietly. But the point is that we cannot cure the diseases that plague humanity. The Muggle world is making huge advances without us. We can take care of our own, Harry. He lowered his voice. We can take care of you.
What is keeping you tied so closely to the Muggle world, Harry? Minerva asked, turning toward him and studying him earnestly. Friends? School? A special someone? Harry frowned as he shook his head.
Nothing special, he answered. He glanced at Severus. No one special.
Before yesterday, I didn't even think I had any other options.
He took a deep breath. I want to meet my godfather. I'd like to meet him before I commit to anything else.
Sirius lives at headquarters, said Minerva. You could come early on Wednesday and stay for the meeting after you meet him.
I'd rather meet him somewhere else, said Harry, somewhere neutral. The coffee house?
No. Severus's refusal was immediate.
Why not? What's wrong with him? Does he have a communicable disease? Really bad manners?
He's an escaped convict.
Severus could have delivered the statement, that bit of truth, smugly. Instead, he sounded tired.
Harry stared at him. You've got to be kidding.
He narrowed his eyes at Severus's return stare.
You're not kidding. My godfather is an escaped convict.
He dropped his head back and laughed, then rubbed his eyes between his glasses.
He was wrongly accused, said Minerva. Harry, he was framed, and when he escaped from prison several years ago, the Muggle government put out alerts for him, too. There is a ministry office that works with our Minister of Magic.
She stopped and shook her head as Harry gave his most disbelieving look yet.
The point is, he cannot appear in public unless he is disguised, and it is dangerous for him to do so. I'm sorry, Harry, but your only option is to come to Grimald Place. You may come on Monday. She raised her hand, palm out, as Severus began to protest. No, I know you are the head of the Order, Severus, but this is not about the Order. This is about a young man and the godfather he has never met, his father's best friend at that. A man who, like most of the wizarding world, believes Harry Potter to be dead. I think we can afford them the privacy of a meeting without the Order present.
I was not suggesting that we plop Harry in the middle of the Order meeting and call out, "Surprise!" huffed Severus,
but he exchanged a look with Minerva and sighed.
Dinner, then. 7 o'clock. I will see the creature prepares a suitable meal.
Harry looked from Minerva to Severus.
Creature?
Magical transportation can be tracked. There's an entire ministry office devoted to it, Ron said as they walked together to the tube station from Harry's flat. So we never operate directly to headquarters, or flew there, unless we're already at protected location.
Protected location? Harry limped along after Ron, and Ron glanced back and slowed down.
Another place under Fidelius, like headquarters, explained Ron. He had shown up at Harry's apartment 30 minutes ago wearing a green rain slicker over a hooded sweatshirt. The hood covered his hair completely. He was also wearing tinted glasses. The Fidelius is a protection spell. There's a secret keeper. Only the secret keeper can reveal the location of the house under Fidelius.
Minerva, said Harry. She told me.
Just try telling someone else, said Ron. You won't be able to. Try it on Hermione's mum, or someone at the coffee shop.
Harry made a mental note to do just that. Magic was all kinds of crazy. He'd never be able to figure out its limitations.
Right. Well, we're taking the tube to my brother's flat, explained Ron. I'm their secret keeper, so you'll be able to get in there. Then I'll side along with you to Grimmauld Place.
The brothers in question were the twins, the ones that owned the joke shop and were living with the same woman. Harry and Ron stood in front of a wall on the third floor corridor of a modest apartment building, and Ron took Harry's hand and laid it against the wall. The wall wasn't a wall at all, it turned out, but a door, which Ron opened by muttering some words Harry didn't catch. Harry stepped inside behind Ron and pushed the door close behind him.
"This is him," said Ron to the three people standing between them and the fireplace on the opposite side of the room. He grinned.
"Harry Potter."
"Hello," Harry nodded politely.
"My brother Fred, my brother George."
Ron pointed to the first one red-headed man, then the other.
"And this is Angelina Johnson."
All three stared at Harry. He shifted uncomfortably. The twin on the left, Fred, was the first to speak.
The scar?"
His twin promptly elbowed him in the ribs, and Ron shook his head.
"Might as well just cut off your fringe, mate. Everyone's going to be asking."
Harry frowned. He'd been doing that a lot lately, he realized. He reached up and pushed his hair away from his forehead, revealing the jagged scar he'd spent most of his life trying to hide. Fred took a step forward. These were the twins that Ron laughed about? The rule breakers? The pranksters? They looked dead serious. Harry dropped his hand. His hair swung down over his forehead again.
"Mate."
And suddenly Fred's arms were around him and he was being pulled into a bear hug. He barely attempted to react, to move his own arms up reflexively to pat Fred on the back. Were all the Weasleys this emotional? When he was enveloped by the other twin as well. Fred stepped to the side to make room for Angelina, and now three pair of arms were around him.
"Give him air! Give him air!"
Ron was pulling his brothers away from Harry, and Harry, looking slightly disheveled and decidedly confused, smiled crookedly at a grinning yet tearful Angelina.
"I know I don't know you," she said, "but I've heard about you my whole life. And if you were dead... but you're not, see? And now everything, everything has changed."
George, the twin on the right, put his arm around Angelina.
"You'd have been in Ron's class at Hogwarts, Harry. And you'd have been in Gryffindor with all of us. So from here on out, you're an honorary Gryffindor."
He pulled a red and gold scarf out of his pocket and draped it ceremoniously around Harry's neck. Ron rolled his eyes.
"Snape's not going to like that much," he said.
"Ah, who cares about Snape?" laughed George, pulling on the end of the scarf. "Mr. Grumpy will just have to live with it. Besides, Sirius will love it."
"Why won't Severus like it?" asked Harry, turning toward Ron.
"Gryffindor colors," said Ron. "Snape was Slytherin. Mortal enemies of Gryffindors and all that."
"Mortal enemies?"
"Stop it, Ron," said Angelina. She unwrapped the scarf and pulled it off Harry's neck. Better to go into this completely neutral, I'd say. She smiled at Harry, and he couldn't help but smile back at her infectious grin. "House competitions for childhood rivalries, Harry. We're all on the same team now, aren't we?" They all stared at him. They looked hopeful. He glanced at Ron. Ron had the same expression on his face. He nodded.
"Right, same team," he said.
He held up a hand as they broke out in smiles again, and George pounded him on the back for good measure.
"Listen, I'm awfully new at this. I really don't think I'd be much good to you at all, but, well, I want to know more. About my parents, and about magic."
"Well, we'll be here with the fresh bottle of fire whiskey when you come back," he said. "After an evening with Snape and Sirius, you'll need it."
"Ignore him, Harry," said Ron.
"Come on, we're going to be late."
He held out his arm.
Harry stepped up next to him and placed his hand on Ron's arm and braced himself. They landed on a narrow doorstep. Harry stumbled as the world seemed to morph in around them, and Ron gripped his elbow to keep him on his feet, then pulled him through the door and into a dark foyer that smelled of lemon wax. Someone was shouting.
"We're a bit early," said Ron quietly.
"Bastard! How long have you known?"
"Sirius, calm down. He said the boy will be here at 7 o'clock. It's very nearly..."
"Blood traitors! Aliens! Cursed scum of Gryffindor mothers! My son! My own son!"
"Silencio!"
Severus' voice rose above the others. The high-pitched woman's voice was cut off mid-word.
"They are in the foyer now, listening to you scream like a 2-year-old, Black."
It was Severus who appeared first. Harry stared at him, smiling tentatively. The man was dressed in robes. Definitely robes. Robes that fit close that flared out somewhat at the hips. Black robes, with rows of buttons, reminiscent of a priest's cassock. His hair was tied back at the nape of his neck, and he wore black boots made from what appeared to be snakeskin.
"Thank you, Mr. Weasley. One of us will get him home safely," said Severus.
Ron nodded.
"Good luck, mate,"
he whispered. He nodded and went back to the door. They heard the soft crack of apparition a moment later.
"You just now told him?" asked Harry, lowering his voice and looking at Severus in confusion. "You would have been insufferable had I told him earlier," replied Severus. "He would have insisted on leaving Grimmauld Place to find you, putting himself, and indeed the entire order, in danger."
"Harry?" The man was approaching from behind Severus. He was wearing an out-of-date, too-large smoking jacket. His hair was long, like Severus's, and he had a thick mustache. He stopped next to Severus and stared at Harry. Harry stared back.
"Harry Potter, meet Sirius Black, your godfather."
Severus's voice was dry. Neither Harry nor Sirius moved.
"Dinner is in 30 minutes. Do take this time to get acquainted."
Severus backed away several steps and caught Harry's eye, ignoring Sirius altogether.
"If you need anything, Harry, just call for me."
He stressed the name Harry, almost as if claiming it, claiming him. Severus turned and disappeared down the corridor. Harry saw him brush past someone else without comment. The other man, tall and lanky, looked as worn as Sirius, but where Sirius had a hard, angular look about him, this man seemed almost soft and faded.
"I can't believe... James! You look like your dad, Harry!"
The man's hands were on Harry's shoulders now, and he was gripping them hard, staring at Harry with dark, desperate eyes.
"He has his mother's eyes, Sirius. Lily's eyes."
The second man stood beside Sirius now.
"We're sorry, Harry. We didn't know. Not until now. Albus, damn him. Why did he do this? You are alive! Look at him, Remus, the spitting image of James, right here!"
And Harry grinned, because it occurred to him, suddenly, that they hadn't asked to see his scar. They already believed he was Harry Potter, and they were happy to see him, not because of some prophecy, but because he was their friend's son.
"I think he's mute,"
Sirius said to Remus in a pretend whisper.
"Not mute. Overwhelmed," corrected Harry.
"It's a lot to take in. Whose house is this?"
It was something to say, anyway. He felt awkward despite the easy familiarity Sirius Black exuded. "What? Snape didn't tell you?"
Sirius grinned at Harry. The grin was half-boyish, half-maniacal.
"It's my place. I grew up here, in fact. That's my mother you heard screaming in the background a few minutes ago. Permanent sticking charm on the back of her portrait. We've never been able to get her off the wall. I'd like to stick her up there with the house elves, really.
Sirius.
But it's really too late to behead her. Seeing as how she died 10 years ago and I'm still in Azkaban.
Sirius." Remus's voice rose. He gently pried Sirius' hands off Harry's shoulders.
"You're babbling, and I doubt that Harry knows about the Black family tradition regarding house elves."
He extended a hand to Harry.
"Remus Lupin, another good friend of your parents, Harry. I'm so pleased to meet you."
They shook hands, and Remus dropped his arm around Sirius' shoulder.
"Why don't we go up to the parlor for a few minutes until Severus calls us for dinner?"
He nodded towards the long flight of stairs and paused, his face taking on a worried look as Harry adjusted his stance, leaning more heavily on his crutch. Sirius was staring at the crutch now, too, looking confused.
"Can you manage stairs, Harry?"
Remus asked. Harry looked up the long flight and shrugged.
"Sure. I just take a bit longer to get around, that's all."
"All right, then. I'll go up and get the fire going and wait for you up there." Sirius stared at Harry uncomfortably after Remus hurried up the stairs.
Have you always? He faltered.
Harry looked puzzled, then realized his godfather was asking about his injury.
My leg? No, not always. A year or so. I had an accident while I was in the service.
Harry moved to the stairway and started to climb it. Good leg up, bad leg following. Rebalance. Again. Sirius followed, staying a couple of stairs behind.
You know, we can fix that. Probably. There's quite a bit magic can do, Harry. You don't have to live with that.
Sirius spoke earnestly as he moved slowly up the stairs behind Harry.
I know. They've all told me.
Harry panted slightly as he paused on the landing midway up. He looked up at his godfather and smiled.
I can't say I'm not interested. Everything takes so damn long now.
It's strong enough. It just hurts. He took a breath, steeling himself, then started up the second flight. He made it up 4 more stairs when he caught sight of the line of the house elf trophies. It was inevitable. The stairs were steep and unfamiliar, the house and stairway dark, and he had never before seen a house elf, living or dead, in whole or in part. The line of preserved heads of alien-looking creatures was startling. He lost his footing and fell back hard against Sirius. Sirius stumbled, and they ended up in a heap on the landing. Harry was rather accustomed to falling. Well, he hadn't been falling a lot lately, but he had fallen plenty of times in the months after hospital when he was learning to live with his injury. He had learned how to fall safely, and most important, how to right himself once he was down. But he'd never before fallen on top of someone else, someone not necessarily accustomed to falling, or to his limitations. His crutch fell backward, and as he lay on the landing on top of his godfather, both of them awkwardly scrambling to separate themselves and get upright again, the metal crutch tumbled down the wooden stairs with a great deal of noise, somehow managing to fall end to end as the rubber foot caught the second stair instead of sliding gracefully down. Sirius scrambled to his feet, looking worried, apologetic, and out of sorts, while Harry managed to get to a seated position on the landing. He sat there, trying to catch his breath, and didn't seem to notice the shot from above as Remus ran out to investigate the noise, nor Sirius's hand on his shoulder as he bent down over him. He did notice the dark form at the bottom of the stairs, however, and the boots approaching on those same stairs. His crutch was held out to him a moment later, and he took it from Severus gratefully. Severus stood on the stairs in front of him while he used the crutch to push himself up. He knew immediately he wouldn't be able to make it up or down the stairs on his own. His leg wouldn't support any weight at all.
All right then, Harry? Sirius looked at him hopefully.
No. Legs. He bit his lower lip. I'm going to need a bit to sort it out.
Sirius, could you please bring a standard pain potion and an analgesic from the potion stores to the sitting room? Asked Severus quietly.
Sirius squeezed Harry's shoulder quickly, then pushed past Severus and disappeared down the stairs.
Well, that was interesting, said Remus lightly, obviously speaking to Severus.
Harry, I'm very sorry. Creature keeps these stairs polished. We're all used to them.
Harry shook his head. No, it's not that. I was just...
He glanced up at the mounted heads of house elves.
Surprised. Lost my footing.
Remus, would you fetch some extra pillows from one of the bedrooms and bring them to the sitting room? I'll wait here while Harry gets his breath back, then apparate up with him.
Of course, Severus.
Remus, too, squeezed Harry's shoulder, then turned and hurried up the stairs.
It is overwhelming, said Severus.
It was a statement, not a question. Severus made no move to approach Harry further. He watched Harry grimace as he once again tested his weight on his leg, then looked up at the corridor above as Remus hurried by with an armload of pillows. He stepped up beside Harry, and instead of offering his arm as he had done in the past, and as Ron had done just a little while ago, he wrapped both arms around him. He was fortunate that he did so. When they landed, Harry's leg collapsed, but Severus had a good grip on him and immediately lowered him to the sofa. Remus, operating in such a way that Harry knew they had done this before, more than once, arranged pillows behind Harry and handed him a glass of water.
"You'll want that after the pain potion," he said as he settled back on the love seat across from the sofa. "I'll have creatures serve dinner here," said Severus.
He was staring at Harry's legs critically, examining the position on the sofa. He frowned and wedged a pillow between Harry's hip and the back of the sofa, and without asking leave, reached down and began untying Harry's shoes. The pillow was in the perfect spot, and Harry smiled gratefully.
"You will feel better after you take this," said Severus, handing the vial Sirius had just pressed into his hand to Harry.
Harry studied the green liquid in the odd glass vial for longer than was strictly necessary. It didn't look remotely like any medication he'd ever had, not even the awful cough syrup with which Aunt Petunia had liberally dosed him when he was a child, even when he wasn't very sick at all, the kind that made him sleepy.
That had been sticky, syrupy, and medicinal, while this looked more like orange juice. Green orange juice.
Harry?
Severus's hand was on his shoulder. Harry pulled himself from his musings and looked at him.
Take it. It will ease the pain.
Severus made it himself, Remus assured him. He's one of the best potions masters in Europe.
And Remus should know, Sirius sputtered to a stop.
He makes a great hangover remedy, said Remus, frowning at Sirius. Harry finally lifted the potion to his lips, closed his eyes, and downed it.
Lovely, he sputtered,
swallowing the last of it with difficulty. He drank most of the water Remus had given him, then held up the glass in a salute to him.
Thank you. I needed that, he said.
The potion kicked in almost immediately, filling him with a sense of warm relaxation from chest to toes, and he took the second without protest. Severus left to change the dinner arrangements, and Sirius and Remus sat side by side on the love seat, wearing matching worried looks. Harry adjusted himself on the sofa. He cleared his throat and smiled awkwardly at his godfather and Lupin.
Sorry about that. Didn't mean to be a bother.
He glanced at the empty vials.
Those things are great. I could get used to that kind of magic.
Severus's pain potions do come in handy, said Lupin with an odd smile.
We have sobriety potions, too, said Sirius. And, of course, hangover potions if you forget to take the other one or pass out before you get the chance. Kills a hangover in 30 seconds.
Useful, that, said Harry. He smiled back awkwardly at his godfather. So, Harry, Severus says you're at uni. What are you studying? Remus's calm voice broke the awkward silence.
Pre-med, replied Harry quickly, pucking up. I never knew I was interested in medicine until I got injured, and had to spend so much time in the hospital and with doctors.
We have our own brand of medicine in the magical world, said Remus, nodding toward the empty potion vials. Before the current ministry put an end to it, we had specialists who bridged the magical and muggle worlds.
Harry frowned. One more mention of the current ministry.
What do you mean? He asked.
Oh, like Fred and George Weasley, said Sirius. They have a joke shop. Well, they had a joke shop.
Yeah, Ron told me, said Harry. I actually met them just before I came here. We operated from their place.
They operate by discreet owl order now, said Remus. The ministry shut them down because they sold muggle items at the store.
They sold to muggles, too, by mail order. Ron had told him about owls already, so he knew that they were used as a type of postal system in the wizarding world.
You said you were in the service? Sirius asked abruptly.
R.A.F., answered Harry, glad to be back in familiar territory. I knew my eyes weren't good enough to be a pilot, but I loved the idea of flying and was training to be a technician.
Flying?
Sirius brightened and leaned forward.
You like to fly, do you?
I do. Had never done before I joined up, of course, but I knew I'd love it. I used to dream about flying all the time. He smiled. There was nothing about flying he didn't love. Made a lot of us sick, really, but I did really well with it and was slotted for an onboard technical role.
I have a flowing motorcycle,
exclaimed Sirius, leaning forward, eyes as bright as a little boy's.
Custom job. We could go flying, Harry, and I'll get you a broom. The sort of thing a godfather should have gotten for you when you were a boy.
A firebolt, don't you think, Remus? His hand went lowered to Remus's thigh, and he gripped it now in excitement. While Harry's gaze quickly locked on that hand, Remus ignored it.
A broom would be a wonderful gift for a godson, Sirius. Even a grown man like Harry would appreciate a firebolt.
I'd like to try that motorcycle, too, I think, said Harry, still staring at Sirius's hand. He didn't mention that Minerva had already filled him in on Sirius's prized position. He cleared his throat.
Listen, are you two...
He made a motion with his hand, and Sirius looked puzzled for a moment, then followed Harry's gaze to where his hand gripped Remus's thigh. He immediately snatched it away.
No, of course not. I was just excited. Emotional.
He made himself relax against the back of the love seat, folding his hands behind his neck and crossing his legs.
Oh.
Harry sounded like he didn't believe it. He looked at his hands, then raised his eyes, a cautious look on his face.
Do you have a problem with same-sex relationships? He asked.
Sirius's mouth dropped open, and he looked sidelong at Remus. It was obvious that he didn't know how to respond and couldn't interpret Harry's expression. He sighed.
No, not at all, Harry.
Harry nodded.
Good, because I won't be bringing any girls over to visit. I just want to be clear on that from the start, all right?
He searched their faces. He was right. He knew he was right about them.
It took me long enough to come to terms with it. I don't want her to start all over again on that roller coaster.
Sirius stared at Harry. Harry stared right back.
Sirius was the first to crack. He dropped his head into his hands and started to laugh.
I can't believe it. We've been at this for years, years, and my godson outs us within 30 minutes of meeting me.
Harry's worried look turned into a smile.
Really?
No one knew? And honestly, I didn't have a thing to do with it. You rather outed yourself, don't you think, grabbing his thigh like it was a walking stick?
We like girls, too, said Sirius, lowering his voice. Have you ever tried it with...
Remus elbowed him.
Quiet! Quiet! He whined.
You've just met him, Sirius. Godson or not, queer or not, James and Lily's son or not, you don't bring up threesomes in polite conversation.
You two fight like a couple, you know, said Harry.
Are you sure no one knows?
His smile conveyed that he was teasing, and Sirius relaxed a little. Everyone has more important things on their minds now, said Remus. And we've been around here so long, we're practically fixtures.
That, and with Sirius ogling the ladies, well, I don't think they consider what we get up to after they leave.
Even Severus? Asked Harry.
Snape?
Sirius barked out the name.
He shook his head, laughing.
Severus doesn't... I mean, he wouldn't.
Severus is a very private man, said Remus, interrupting Sirius. But yes, I'm sure he knows.
So neither of you has dated him? Asked Harry.
Now both Remus and Sirius were staring at him. Remus looked surprised and thoughtful.
Sirius looked amused. Date Snape? Good one, Harry.
Before Harry could open his mouth, a small creature with an overloaded tray suddenly appeared in front of him just behind a loud crack. The creature snapped its long, knobby fingers and a fully set table materialized, complete with a deep green linen tablecloth and lighted tapers and polished silver handles.
Master Prince says set the table in the mistress's parlor. The small creature intoned as it walked around the table, snapping fingers at each side and producing ornate wooden high-backed chairs.
Defile the mistress's parlor where the blood traitor and the vile creature sit so close together on mistress's fainting couch,
it muttered, just loud enough for them to hear.
Shut it, creature, growled Sirius.
Creature, enough. Send up the food and be on your way.
The creature bowed toward the door, where Severus was now standing, holding a heavy crystal goblet half-filled with red wine.
Yes, Master Prince. Creature is here to serve you. Creature will do as you request.
Creature's voice was both gravelly and mournful. He straightened, snapped his fingers, then disappeared with another startling cuck as their dinner appeared on the table.
Damn it, Snape! He's supposed to be my elf, complained Sirius.
Elf? That thing was an elf? Asked Harry, surprised.
A house elf, explained Severus.
He ignored Sirius and placed his wine glass on the table.
Creature has lived here for the entirety of his long life. While technically he is a black family house elf, he answers to the master of the house, and he perceives that master to be me.
Prince my eye, Sirius muttered. You are Snape, not Prince. How he gets around the fact that you're half-blood is beyond me.
Harry's mouth had opened, trying to form a question. Severus interrupted before he could voice it.
I will answer your questions during dinner, Harry. I'm sure you have many. Can you sit at the table if your leg is kept straight? I flew called Poppy, and she has agreed to come by after dinner to examine it.
I can sit, answered Harry. I don't know what was in that potion, but it worked like a charm.
And since Snape didn't bother to explain, said Sirius, Poppy is a mediwitch, and she knows what she's doing.
Never told me about Poppy, actually,
said Harry with a groan as he lifted himself onto a chair that Severus had pulled up next to the sofa.
She and Severus have already told me about your group here and what's going on in your world.
He submitted to Severus positioning the chair at the table and helping him arrange his leg on an ottoman.
And I know about the prophecy, too, why everyone knows about me.
Sirius had taken the seat across from Harry with Remus beside him. He frowned at that and gave Severus a suspicious glare.
I'd rather not discuss all that now, he said.
He picked up his wine glass and lifted it toward the center of the table.
To my godson, he said, nodding at the others. Alive and well.
His voice caught with emotion as he continued the impromptu toast.
Here's to making up for the lost years.
He raised his glass again, and Harry lifted his own. Remus and Severus joined the toast, though Severus's eyes stayed trained on Sirius.
The lost years, Harry repeated. I would have come around sooner, but I didn't know I was dead.
Poppy Pomfrey stared at Severus Snape from her usual position in the chair in front of his desk.
You are telling me, she said, eyeing Severus with narrowed eyes,
that the patient you have called me here to examine is Harry Potter?
Severus would have laughed had he not already had this conversation with Minerva and then Black and Lupin.
Yes.
He pushed a lock of lank black hair behind his ear that tapped impatiently on his desk.
What cause do you have not to believe me? Do I have a history of feeding you ridiculous lies? Of joking with you?
But Albus... Albus himself told me.
She looked again at the painting on the wall behind Severus. A portrait of Albus hung there, unanimated. When Albus had died, Voldemort had somehow placed an enchantment on Hogwarts, and the portraits there were trapped in the castle, unable to visit their counterparts elsewhere in the magical world. Portrait Albus remained trapped in the castle.
Albus lied.
Severus's gaze softened a notch as Poppy looked affronted.
And he lied for a reason, Poppy.
I simply do not yet know what that reason was, though I suspect he was somehow trying to protect the boy. I will need to get inside Hogwarts and speak with him.
Severus, you can't risk that.
Let Minerva try. She has a better chance of getting into that office than you do, and a higher likelihood of escaping with her life if she's caught.
I will not be caught, and I will not do anything rash, he said. Now, Harry Potter is currently in the sitting room with his godfather and Lupin. I gave him a Class 3 pain potion an hour and a half ago, along with a standard analgesic. He has had wine with dinner and is currently looking at his parents' wedding album. While I suspect he will be in a receptive mood when we appear, please recall that he is, for all intents and purposes, a muggle.
Harry Potter, she muttered, shaking her head in disbelief. Imagine that child, Lillian James's son, growing up without magic.
Severus did not respond. He'd had ample time already to imagine Harry Potter's life, without magic, with the Dursleys.
How much have you told him?
Poppy asked, as they both stood and she collected her bag.
Quite a bit, actually, he said. But even so, he does not yet understand his importance. He wished he understood it more completely.
Poppy followed him up the stairs into the sitting room. He paused in the doorway, and Harry, now sitting in the middle of the sofa between Sirius and Remus, leg propped up on the ottoman before him and dinner table gone, looked up and smiled. He looked exhausted.
"Looks like the execution squad has arrived," said Sirius.
He stood and stepped around Snape to greet Poppy.
"Poppy, you're looking quite lovely tonight," he said.
"I look lovely every time you see me, Sirius, or at least I do if I'm to believe you," she said, leaning forward to kiss his cheek.
"Remus, you're looking well."
Remus was on his feet, too.
"I'll keep Sirius busy for a bit," he said, taking Sirius by the arm and leading him out of the room.
"Call if you need anything,"
instructed Sirius, turning in the doorway.
"He'll be fine," said Severus, pushing the door closed, then leaning against it and facing Harry. "Poppy Pomfrey, Harry," he said, indicating the Mediwitch.
Harry's eyes were already on the woman. Like Severus, she wore robes. Hers were grey over white. Her hair was covered by an old-fashioned wimple, making her look like something from a BBC period show. She addressed Harry professionally as he stared at her.
"Mr. Potter, I'll skip all the pleasantries. I'm sure you're quite tired of people exclaiming over you. I'll just leave it at that. I, too, am both shocked and pleased to see you sitting here tonight. Now, let's have a look at that leg, shall we? Severus, would you help him with his trousers?"
Severus had already taken the photo album from Harry.
"As I told you earlier, Poppy, the injury is from an auto crash, a bit more than a year ago. Harry fell on the stairs an hour or two ago, but his fall was cushioned by his godfather's big head."
"Severus, behave yourself."
Poppy stood back as Harry unfastened his trouser button and zip. Severus helped slide the trousers down and off, draping them on the love seat. The routine was a familiar one to Harry. He'd been examined dozens of times, though never on a parlor sofa. He was accustomed to people seeing the scars from the surgery, prodding his thigh and hip, measuring the slightly atrophied leg. Poppy Pomfrey, however, didn't do a single thing in the usual way. For starters, she used only her wand, tracing it along the curved scar on his hip, prodding it against the flesh of his thigh, tapping it against his hip bone just exactly where the pain was always the worst. Severus sat on the ottoman, watching her closely as she worked.
"Now, just exactly when did this happen, dear?"
asked Poppy as she frowned down at his leg, now tapping her wand against her own leg.
"March, last year," he answered.
She retraced the line of the longest scar.
"And this? What did they do?"
"Repaired the hip fracture," he said. "I have quite a bit of hardware in there, I'm told."
He glanced over at Severus, but Severus's eyes were fixed on Harry's leg.
"What about here?"
She prodded a second scar gently with her wand tip. "They went in to remove scar tissue," Harry said, still looking at Severus. "It helped a bit with the pain." Poppy frowned again.
"We can repair this, Mr. Potter. I'll need to do more scans and perhaps call in a specialist, but the bones can be completely regrown. Once the connective tissue is restored, a good physical therapy program will take care of the muscle atrophy. You'll be walking without the cane in a matter of days." Now she glanced back at Severus. "There is one thing, though."
"What exactly do you mean by hardware?" asked Severus. He scooted the ottoman closer to the sofa and reached out to run his fingers over the incision site. Even though the skin there was still numb, Harry had to close his eyes against the thrill of Severus's touch.
"I have an X-ray at home," said Harry. "They used a metal plate, some screws, some wire." He shrugged. "The usual." He stared at Severus, puzzled. "What's wrong?"
"It will have to come out," said Severus. "All of it. We cannot grow new bone around screws."
"A surgeon, Severus," Poppy was pressing her lips. "One we can trust to keep this a secret."
"Wait," Harry struggled to sit up, grabbing Severus's hand. "I had several very painful surgeries already. To put all that hard wire in, it's holding my leg together. You can't just take it out again."
"One large advantage wizarding medicine has on muggle medicine is the bone and tissue regrowth," explained Severus.
He squeezed Harry's hand, then released it lest Poppy notice the attention, and handed Harry his trousers. He helped him lift his bad leg and slide the trousers back on.
"We can regrow bone, muscle, skin, connective tissue, and even some organs. We can regrow both your damaged bones and the connective tissue around them. It is similar to giving you a hip, Harry, without invasive surgery."
"You'll be pain-free, Harry," said Poppy gently. "The muscles in your weak leg will catch up with your good leg. You'll walk without a limp. You won't need a cane."
Harry rubbed his leg unconsciously, then looked at Poppy.
"What are the risks?" he asked, calmer now. "And the success rate?"
Poppy looked puzzled.
"Success rate? What do you mean?"
Now Harry looked puzzled. "You know, what's the chances the procedure will be successful? 50%? 33%?"
"Why, 100%, of course,"
answered Poppy with another puzzled look, this time at Severus. "Providing the potion doesn't have screws and wires to deal with, I imagine that foreign materials like that would be fused right in with the new bone." She shuddered. Harry sighed. "Well, it was worth a try, anyway." He adjusted his position, straightening his leg a bit.
"Worth a try? Why would you give up when we've just told you the procedure virtually guarantees a pain-free future, with no limp and no cane?"
"Because someone has to remove the hardware, and in my experience that means a trip to the hospital, and hospitals mean filling out paperwork, and you all don't seem so keen on anyone knowing I'm alive."
He shook his head. "And I really don't think I could convince my surgeon to undo what she spent so much time doing." Severus leaned forward, resting his hand on Harry's knee. He was frustrated, with himself more than Harry. They were going too fast, overwhelming him.
"I admit that this is an unexpected complication, and I apologize. I didn't realize you had had such extensive muggle surgery, Harry. Invasive surgical procedures are much less common in the wizarding world, but we will work something out."
He stood.
"Poppy, perhaps you can give Harry some idea of the bone and connective tissue regrowth process. Harry, if, after you hear what Poppy has to say, you would like to go forward, I will find a qualified surgeon we can trust to keep your identity secret."
Harry frowned, but turned his attention to Poppy as she sat beside him. Severus slipped out the door as Poppy began to explain how the Skelligrow and other potions worked together, how long the procedure would take, how much pain he could expect. He was stumbling over the entire concept of bone regrowth, brain too mired in where Severus had gone, and how he was going to find a surgeon who would remove the hardware, when Sirius appeared at the door again and came in to take Severus's vacated seat on the ottoman. He reached out a hand and laid it on Harry's knee, unwittingly mimicking the same gesture Severus had used. Sirius's hand felt very different than Severus's had, holding comfort rather than promise.
"You can come back this weekend. Stay the night. We've got plenty of room here, Harry. That way Poppy can be here to watch over you while they—"
He trailed off, catching the looks on both Harry and Poppy's faces.
"What? What's going on?"
He narrowed his eyes and turned to Poppy.
"You can help him, right? Fix a little thing like a bum leg? Nothing to it. Not a Skelligrow."
He trailed off again.
"My leg and hip are put together with a steel plate and screws," Harry explained.
Apparently, these have to come out before they can do anything magical to help me out. He shrugged. Really, he was no worse off than he'd been when he left his flat, and he'd met his godfather and seen photographs of his parents. That, with a good dinner, trumped the beheaded house elves and the scare on the stairs.
Screws!
Sirius nearly shrieked. He rose halfway to his feet before Poppy pushed him back down. It's a common muggle method of strengthening compromised bones, she explained. But we can't use Skelegrow. She shuddered. Can you imagine? The Skelegrow would start rebuilding the bone. The metal bits would come loose and would just float. Float around inside his leg and get pulled back into the bone, or worse yet, the ligaments or muscle. Sirius looked ill. Harry held up his hand. Thank you. Poppy, supplied the mini witch with a smile. Everyone calls me Poppy. And Harry, if you are going to be among wizards, you need to know that there are illnesses carried only by other wizards. You'd be wise to consider immunizations for the most serious of these, dragonpox, for example.
Definitely dragonpox, said Sirius, grinning. Itchy as hell, and worse once the pustules start to smoke.
Harry didn't bother mentioning he'd already had a touch of it.
It's a rite of passage, said Sirius. It can light your sheets on fire if you're not careful.
It's getting late. Remus was in the doorway now. Severus is going to take you back to the twins' place, Harry. He wants to know if you can make it down to the entryway. Harry stood carefully, using his cane for leverage and pulling himself up, then to steady himself.
Why can't he come up here? Asked Sirius, not bothering to hide the whine. Harry can't manage those stairs by himself. Look what happened earlier.
I'd like to give it a try, said Harry. He knew from the past year that if you went up a set of stairs, you'd have to get back down. There was nothing for it, and just because there was magic now, he shouldn't count on it always to be there to help him out.
Those potions helped. I think I can manage now.
I'll walk down with you, Harry, said Remus. Harry turned to Sirius. He held out his hand in a gesture that seemed oddly formal and muggle in this setting.
Sirius, it was great to meet you. Let's do it again sometime. Maybe next time you can tell me more stories about my dad.
How about next time I teach you how to play wizard's chess? Suggested Sirius. Instead of taking Harry's hand to shake it, he took hold of his wrist and pulled him forward into his arms, hugging him properly.
And if I'm lucky, it won't be another 20 years, he said.
No, said Harry, smiling as he hugged his godfather back. It won't.
Severus stood in front of the library window, holding the large manila envelope Harry had given him last night when he'd escorted him home. All the way home, via an intermediary stop at the Weasley twins' flat. Harry had been extremely grateful to fall onto his own sofa.
"What did you think of your godfather?"
Severus had asked him as he found the X-ray film on the desk exactly where Harry told him it would be. He had already placed an extra pain potion on the counter in the loo, and had opened Harry's medicine cabinet and frowned at the contents.
"I liked him," said Harry. "He seemed genuinely happy to meet me. He obviously loved my parents, too. He couldn't say enough nice things about my dad."
"Sirius Black went to prison just after your parents died," said Severus. "He hasn't transitioned back into society entirely well. The wizarding world he found when he returned was a different one than the one he left behind."
Severus settled on the couch beside Harry.
"And for the record, your mother was the true gem, Harry. Your father was a conceited prick."
"Hey!"
Harry batted tiredly at Severus in protest, and Severus caught hold of his hand and laced their fingers together. Casual physical gestures like this seemed easy with Harry, and he knew he should wonder at that, for he wasn't the most demonstrative of people, and shunned much casual touching in his day-to-day life. He rested their hands on his leg.
"You are tired."
He studied Harry, assessing him with his dark gaze.
"I've left a pain potion on the counter in the loo for you. Take it just before you go to bed. It should allow you a restful night."
Harry smiled vaguely and let his head fall onto Severus's shoulder.
"Thanks. That stuff is excellent. I'm guessing it's highly addictive and shouldn't be taken every day."
"It will lose efficacy over time, cease to work against the pain, as your body becomes accustomed to the ingredients. I can increase the active ingredients somewhat. Perhaps we can get you through a year with judicious use when it is most needed, if you decide against the medical procedures."
He found himself squeezing Harry's hand again. In comfort, solidarity, just to feel the warmth of it, the pulse of life beneath his own.
I do have painkillers, you know, said Harry. He pointed to a plastic container of pills on the table. I'm not dependent on them. They give me a pretty limited quantity, so I just use them when I overdo it, or when I have a lot planned for the day, more than I really should. He snuggled into Severus's side, and Severus gave an exaggerated sigh, then reached for the pill bottle and examined the label. Harry liked how Severus smelled. He even found the bony shoulder strangely comfortable.
You should not take this often. It can impair rational thought and cause sleepiness and constipation.
Right, said Harry, a smile tugging at his mouth at the clinical way Severus had said constipation.
I do need to ask you, began Severus,
about the surgery, the bone regrowth, I know. He closed his eyes and relaxed marginally more into Severus's side. Everyone seems dead sure it will work, and I'll be rid of this limp and cane.
And the pain, added Severus, and these pills.
He dropped them back onto the table and, giving in, wrapped his arm around Harry. Harry fit so well against him. He imagined for a moment Black seeing them together like this. So, yes, I'll do it, said Harry. If you can find someone you trust, and someone qualified to remove the plate and screws. And now, as Severus held up the X-ray to the library window, he saw again just what was keeping Harry Potter on his feet. He didn't pity Muggles for their lack of magic. Instead, he was amazed at what they could do to give a man at least partial use of his leg when his hip had essentially been crushed. There were actually two metal plates, each long and narrow. They were secured to the bone with a series of screws and pins, 9 of them in all. Severus winced inwardly and frowned. He was getting soft, too soft. He was wincing for one reason only, because he was thinking of Potter, of Harry, in constant pain, and it should not pain him to think of another in pain. It should not. He had seen far too many in pain already, and before this was over he was certain he would see more than he could even imagine. But Harry Potter liked him. Harry Potter found him attractive, desirable. Harry Potter, who apparently didn't much care what others thought, wanted him. He had allowed the quiet intimacy of the snuggle on the sofa, had not resisted when Harry had pulled him into a kiss, when he'd run his hands over Severus's shoulders, his back, and then had counted the buttons on his waistcoat and said something ridiculous about undoing them all with his teeth. But another night. He'd been so tired, and Severus had much to do, to think about, though when he got back to his room at Grimald Place, all he could think about was the smell and feel of Harry Potter. He turned around now when a knock sounded on the door behind him. Hermione Granger stepped into the room. She paused only a moment, then held up a file folder. 3 possibilities. I have brief dossiers on each. Anne Jordan looks the best all around. She's married to Lee Jordan's older brother. She paused on the other side of his desk as Severus took the folder from her and flipped through it. Her mother and younger sister were tortured and killed last year, she added softly. She's fled to France, and they're lying low in Muggle Paris, but I imagine she'd do almost anything to help end this war.
She's not an orthopedic specialist, said Severus, frowning. She deals more with general surgeries, appendectomies, gallbladders.
Severus, we aren't going to find precisely what we need. The pool is incredibly limited as it is. Weatherford is the closest direct link to a member of the Order, and the only one personally affected by the Dark Lord's regime. And she is a surgeon, despite not specializing in orthopedics.
You have not approached her yet, about her willingness to assist us, to perform surgery outside of a hospital?
Hermione shook her head. Look through all 3 files. Bill went to Hogwarts with Paul Jordan. He's agreed to go with me to speak with Anne if you think, as we do, that she's the best option. Severus scanned the dossier. Anne Jordan was 35 years old and had 8 years of experience. Not as much as he would have liked, but the needed surgery wasn't complex and didn't affect any organs. The woman seemed to have a stellar record, too. Would she risk performing a procedure outside of a licensed facility? Severus thought that she might. He sent Hermione off with the X-ray to find Bill and approach Anne Jordan, then returned to the window, staring outside, thinking. Why had Albus Dumbledore wanted the magical world to think Harry Potter was dead? The question had perplexed him from the start. Harry Potter was the child of the prophecy, the one destined to defeat the Dark Lord with a power the Dark Lord knew not.
Neither can live while the other survives.
Was that it? The Dark Lord, believing Harry Potter to be dead, would let down his guard, would believe himself to be invincible, and then? How could Harry Potter swoop in to surprise him when Harry Potter didn't know a whit about him, or about the magical world, or the prophecy, when the Order knew nothing of Harry Potter's very existence? Albus. Albus had left no clues, had he? He had had plenty of time to do so, ample opportunity. He and Severus had been close, had always been close. That last year in particular. Albus had known the end was coming, had been poisoned, cursed, and Severus had been buying him time. More and more time. He'd had a full 6 months that he hadn't expected to have. Plenty of time to tell Severus that he had a secret weapon tucked away in London. No, it couldn't be only that, that Albus was keeping Harry in reserve. More than protecting Harry, too. But what? He had to talk to Albus. Albus trapped in his portrait in Hogwarts in the headmaster's office. The headmaster's office that had been sealed since Albus Dumbledore had died. Perhaps he would use the cloak. Minerva would not like it. Despite the fact that the castle was nearly empty in the summer, the perimeter guarded by Dementors and the grounds and interior watched over by Hagrid and Filch, she would not want him anywhere near Hogwarts. The Dark Lord based his operations at the Ministry these days, though Minerva reported that he had made surprise visits to the school, usually conferring only briefly with her, then meeting with the faculty for impromptu inspections. As headmistress, Minerva had virtually no decisions. Her chief role was to make sure the day-to-day operations continued. Students had schedules, professors taught classes, meals were served in a quiet, orderly fashion. The Ministry, under Voldemort's leadership, made all faculty appointments. Anger welled up in him. The house system was no more than a farce now. Nothing more than names and colors. The heads were all former Slytherins. Voldemort, no matter the weight he put on his own Slytherin roots, made sure that on the surface everything appeared the same. Four houses, four sets of colors, four house ghosts, four mascots, four founders, four Quidditch teams. Four tables in the Great Hall. Four common rooms. Four hourglasses of gyms counting house points in the entrance hall. But beneath the surface, everything was different. He needed to speak with Albus, no matter Minerva's deep reservations. He wanted, no needed, to be in the same room with that infernal portrait, to stare Albus in the eye and tell him that he had ended the previous evening with the boy who wasn't actually dead, pressed up against him on the sofa in his London flat, arms tangled around Severus's shoulders, moist lips pressing against his, moving down to bite his collarbone. The look. The look on Albus's painted face. He leaned his head against the glass, eyes drifting out to the overgrown garden behind the house, to the crumbling fence, the woody hedges, the creaky glider where Black could pass hours smoking one Muggle cigarette after another. As much as he wanted to shock the twinkle out of Albus's oil-painted eyes, the memory of Harry's body, of the taste of his mouth, the feel of his soft breath in the hollow of his throat, washed over him now, overpowering his need to punish Albus. He'd tossed and turned last night, when he returned here to the solitude and privacy of his dark bedroom, unsettled, torn. Harry Potter wanted him. And Severus could not deny that the attraction was mutual. In another world, last evening would not have ended on the sofa, both of them fully clothed, both of them vertical. But today, in this world, in his world, no, in Voldemort's world. In Voldemort's world, the attraction was a distraction. For a moment, the briefest of moments, he allowed himself to imagine a world without Voldemort, and with Harry.